Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God and the kingdoms of the world, and Jesus Christ, and what people think Jesus Christ was doing, and what Jesus Christ was really doing. And in our last show, we talked about John D. Rockefeller having said the way to make money is to buy when blood is running in the streets. And of course, then we saw the Rees Commission that talked about a conspiracy, that this was a Rees Commission that was created back in 1952 to 1954, investigating philanthropic organizations that were doing things to alter the way in which people of America viewed history, to move them towards an oligarchy of collectivism. And of course, that's exactly what they did. They had meetings in the investigation that were uncovered by people who did not support the investigation, actually thought that it was wasting time investigating these wonderful foundations. And there are wonderful people in those foundations, and there are wonderful people who do good things with those foundations, but there's also a great deal of power and money behind them. And of course, that's what you have to do, is you have to have front men that represent you so that you will be accepted. LBJ understood this, FDR understood this, and J.D. Rockefeller understood this. And they know that, I mean, anybody can figure this out. It's not rocket science, that you want to have a nice, pretty face up front that everybody can like to do all the nice things. And behind the scenes, you do what you really want done. And they wanted Americans were a tough nut to crack. They owned their own property. They were free people. They were independent people. There was almost very little socialism in the United States at that time, in the early days of this last century. But then we started moving towards public education. We were the most educated people in the world. We were the big achievers throughout the world. We were feeding the whole world, and we were coming into real prosperity, and somebody got the idea that we needed public education. And we didn't really, but we were sold that idea, but we only would receive such an idea because they had already begun changing the way in which we viewed history, viewed words. And I gave the example of the famous founder of the Theosophical Society, or one of the founders, which was Helen Petrova Blavatsky, and how she was talking about the archaic wisdom of religion. Well, the archaic wisdom of religion is that you had to take care of one another as if you cared about one another as much as you cared about yourself. And this would create a loyalty and a brotherhood in society where in hard times, people would help other people. And I always give the story when I went to visit my grandmother and work on wheat farms in North Dakota, that I took some milk back to the store thinking it had been contaminated somewhere along the line. Didn't know if my grandmother didn't do it, because my grandmother had poor eyesight and she could have poured something back into the thing, thinking it was milk and it was actually tomato juice. But I wanted to bring it to the attention of the storekeeper. And the storekeeper insisted that I take another carton, and I says, I think she may have contaminated. I just want you to know that some of your milk may be contaminated, so if you hear about it somewhere else, then you know what's going on. And he says, I don't care. I want you to take this. And he told me that as long as there was food in his store, that my grandmother would never go hungry, because my grandfather was one of the only people in the community that came back and paid every dime that was owed the store, because during the Depression, the store carried a lot of people who couldn't afford to buy certain groceries. And this was just people helping people. And he remembered that it wasn't him that was paid back by my grandfather. He barely even knew my grandfather. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure he ever did know my grandfather. He might have known him, but he would have been a small boy at the time. But his father knew him. His grandfather knew him. And that memory was passed down. I just spoke today in a conference call about an artifact that was found in this common artifact that might be found. And sometimes it's carved out of stone, sometimes it's ceramic, sometimes it's even metal. We actually have a picture of one of these artifacts on our webpage at Preparing You called Tesserae. And a tesserae was usually a clay object, but this was carved out of stone, and it's a picture of a hand on one side, and on the other side is a number of words etched into the stone, and it's a black stone. It's rather decorative, very meticulous in the carving of the hand, which was rather small, and it was used to introduce a stranger to a new home where there was something owed as far as a father or grandfather was concerned. It was said that anybody carrying this should be received and accepted into this home. It was a way of identifying a familial friendship that was created because of some sort of act of favor or heroism at one time. This was, of course, carried over into Rome, and you actually had tesserae that were used to allow you to enter into the free circuses and shows that were always put on by the government to keep the people mollified and distracted. And this was part of the system, part of the culture that you would have this. This is like a season pass to the big game, and they could be handed out as favors or what have you. So this concept of a token opening a door was very common in those days of Rome. They are not all that uncommon now. I mean, you have a Safeway card. It's plastic, and you'll get special deals if you come in with your Safeway card or your United Travelers card or what have you. And so this idea of showing favors to those who carry a particular ID or card is common. And it can be used for good, and it can be used for bad. The church has its own ID system, but we don't use it casually because it's a way of testifying about somebody. One of the problems with this idea of giving somebody an ID card or a card that would open doors for you, would benefit you with a privilege, is that it can begin to exclude others. And if this becomes a national ID card, allows you to fly. We've heard that in Montana, they're not going to be able to get on airplanes because the Homeland Security doesn't want to accept Montana driver's license and ID because they're not in compliance with their new rules. So this is a way in which totalitarianism sneaks its way in, that everybody must comply with somebody somewhere up at the top who decides that if you don't jump through these hoops, you can't get on a plane, you can't have a bank account, you can't access the markets, you won't be able to enter into the marketplace at all, or buy or sell. And this is all a part of the centralization of power that leads to totalitarianism, and eventually leads to Holocausts and brutalizing certain segments of society, which may be very good people, but simply are not a part of this scheme of control. Now, we hear statements coming out in society such as, under capitalism, man exploits man. But under socialism, the process is reversed. John Kenneth Galbraith said something to that effect when he said, under capitalism, man exploits man, but under communism, it's just the opposite. But the reality is what it is some men exploit some men, and under any system, you're going to see the process of that exploitation, and you're either going to do something about it to prevent it, or you're going to do nothing, and it's going to continue. And so, by mentioning the Reese Committee, which of course was, their report was smeared by John D. Rockefeller and others, and there was a lot of money behind smearing it, but the reality also is that many of these meetings took place. Those handwritten notes were there. Somebody went in and read those handwritten notes and were absolutely astonished at what was the conversation at those meetings. Because people thought, well, we're right, and therefore we should convince everybody else that we're right, and we can do this by altering the school books, altering what people will see in what was eventually to become the media. I mean, this began at least in 1908. And certainly has began since the beginning of time. As I said, Augustus knew that man was ruled by words, so he used certain words when he was promoting his new rules and regulations in the new world order of Caesar, which was, by historian standards, the death of the Republic. The term social engineering might have something, as it says in the report, might be something rather dangerous, but the reality is social engineering has been around for a long time. And in order to implement that social engineering, one must often dulcify, if not mollify, the general society so that they aren't really paying attention. Get them distracted with this thing or that thing. And I've seen over my own lifetime, without even examining history, is that you'll often see major news stories that seem really rather trite or kind of something you might see in one of these Expo People magazines or, Inquiring Minds Want to Know type flyers that are on the newsstand. And this story will be paramount in modern media. And you can almost guarantee that somewhere, if you read down, way down in the events of the day, you'll find something strange like somebody fired all the federal judges throughout the United States and appointed them back again under new conditions. And they became new employees. I was just talking to a former prosecuting attorney in Portland, Oregon, who's now retired. He's 75 years old, but he's still, what he is doing is fighting what he calls the corruption of the modern court system. My own father quit the law 3 times because of the fact that he was disgusted with the good old boy practices going on behind the scenes, which you don't hear about in your churches or in your community groups, because it's behind the scenes. It's the gray area conspiracy. And if anybody who thinks that conspiracies don't take place, they haven't studied history, because the history is really a succession of conspiracies. My own great uncle was reported having been executed in the Tower of London by being beheaded because he had divulged government secrets to the enemy, and then later popped up not having been beheaded, but it was an entire ploy of the Queen to make the enemy think that he had betrayed the Queen when he was actually a double agent, giving false information to the enemy. In order to get them to believe that it was true, they pretended to execute him. This is old stuff. This is back in the Boer Wars. This is the way history is written. Conspiracy after conspiracy after conspiracy. And we uncover a few of them in history. Like blowing up the Maine. It was a conspiracy. Invading Cuba. There were conspiracies to create events in order to do this. Vietnam. Gulf of Tonkin, the Liberty, the ship that was almost sunk by the command of the President of the United States. These are facts that you can look up now, but you don't hear about them in your school because you might figure out that what's going on is not always true. And what you're hearing is actually fabricated news. But one of the best ways to get the truth past you is distract you with sensationalism, and that's done all the time in the news. So very few people have heard about the Rees Commission and some of these things, but many of the things that were predicted by bankers, like those who worked on that commission, Norman Dodd and others, the very things that they warned us about, and they could see because they were in the banking industry, has happened. $14.5 trillion in debt going into $23 trillion just a few years from now. And if it hasn't already, I should actually look those figures up. It might have already happened. But we have now issued an EBT card, like the Tesserae of Rome, that would get you free bread and get you into the free circuses and open doors for you. And it was just a little clay thing that was made, and it could actually be used as money because you could loan it to people and they could get into the Colosseum. But an EBT card is much more sophisticated, but it's the same principles in society to mollify society. And it amounts to over 50 million Americans daily standing in invisible virtual reality breadlines. 5 million Americans on welfare, 50 million Americans on Medicaid, 8 million Americans receiving unemployment compensations. And then now this new Obamacare coming out with 10.5 million Americans on Social Security. This is welfare. This is socialism. And we have become used to it. And we find ourselves hard pressed to let go of it because it mollifies us. And it mollifies all of society because we fear going without. We've lost the courage of our society that has made us great. Every mind must make its choices between the truth and repose. It cannot have it both ways, according to Ralph Waldo Emerson. The government has renamed bread as social benefits and now distributes $2.3 trillion of bread per year to the needy. And more, and it's rising. These are old figures again. This constitutes 15% of the country's gross national product. But it's not done by individuals in your community like it was in the little town of Granora, North Dakota, is where the story of the grocery store fella who remembered because his father had told him. And this is community. And you still see this in small towns. But most of America doesn't live in small towns. They live in cities, and they have been divided as communities. They don't think of themselves as communities. They don't look to each other and their neighbor anymore. Their neighbor is nameless. So we have these magnetic strip cards now that open the doors to the grocery stores for people who can't afford to buy the groceries. This is rationing. Already, the instrument of rationing has already begun in America. And if you can't get that ration card, if you don't have the mark of the government, the mark of the beast, the badge of servitude of the government, you will not be let in to the doors. It's not free bread. It's reduced cost in bread. A loaf of bread will cost you $10, $20, $30, $100 if you don't have that card. And you will be sucked into the panem circenses of Rome. As I talked about before, this Roman satire, number 10, written by Juvenal back in AD 100. And in that context, he talks about this free bread and circuses. He creates that actual dialogue already long ago, he says, from when we sold our vote to no man. The people have abdicated our duties for the people who once upon a time handed out military command, high civil office, and legions. Everything now restrains itself and anxiously hopes for just two things, bread and circuses. And with this, provided by debt, not by actual funds that are present in the treasury, we enter into a world of inflation. Milton Friedman says inflation is taxation without legislation, but it is the legislation who created the Federal Reserve that loans money into circulation, creates a Federal Reserve system and a debt based on fractional reserves that don't actually exist. And we are spending money every day that we have not yet earned, have not even yet created. We create that out of an imagination, and we create a card house in which we will be destroyed. The environment of this system, the environment that this system creates, alters the nature of the people. The former prosecutor in Portland who called me recently was also talking about Norway Olympics. With only 5 million people, it has won over 303 Winter Olympic medals. And he's talking about the Trøndelag site where so many of these achievers in Olympic skills are coming from such a small population base. Why are they promoting such achievers? This system is actually now prevalent in Norway, is a socialist system, but it is also has a tight-knit nature to its communities because most of its communities are small. They live in a harsh environment where there's a lot of snow in the wintertime. They're encouraged to do a lot of outdoor things, and being able to be a good skier is a big part of their culture and society, so they're producing Winter Olympics success. But there's also a certain genetic quality to them over the years, I'll say. But it's really the environment of the day that makes that difference. The environment of their society. Now, they're undermining it with their socialist state. They're undermining that community, especially in the larger cities, which they have already done, like in Sweden. If you go to Sweden, you'll see that Sweden is not producing, but with the same type of environment as far as snow is concerned, they're not producing the same type of individuals that are achieving in the Olympics. Why is that? Well, it's more centralized. Its population is more centralized in the cities, and the cities don't serve the individual nature. One of the things about Norwegians that they point out, psychologists point out, is because there are so many communities that are isolated and they're not in those congested cities, that the ability of the individual to be alone, to entertain himself, to become an individual rather than simply a cog in a civil structure, is very important to the growth of that individual, which is what you're seeing, is these individuals winning these medals. Now, it would be better if they would move quicker and more completely away from the socialist society that they have become. But they will have to endure what changes in their society because of the fact that they have become so much of a socialist state. Socialism brings a dullness to society. It breaks down community so that you no longer have to look to neighbor, to that localized, block-sized community, or to the general population through a network which was commonly used by free societies throughout history of man. It's actually this history of community being a government of the people, for the people, and by the people is so poorly expressed in your modern history books that people don't even know that it existed or how it would exist. It has been removed from our collective consciousness. But socialism brings this, and socialism, the United States has been a socialist nation for over 100 years, with the increase from less than 50% of the schools being public schools to almost all of them being public schools, is a move in the direction of socialism. It is public schools is socialism. Social Security is socialism. Medicare, Medicaid, socialism. Welfare, socialism. And socialism, the idea of taking care of the poor, has been around since the beginning of time. But the idea of doing it by force didn't arrive on the scene until Cain decided to create his first city-state. And Sodom was a socialist city-state, where the people belonged to the government, and part of their earnings could be extracted by statute, compelled by men who exercise authority one over the other. This produces societies that can be overrun and overwhelmed and weakened and demoralized and corrupted from the inside out. It breaks down the family. It breaks down the community. It can survive, especially when other nations are still around to prop up economies, and when they are still around to keep small socialist nations from moving in the direction of tyranny and oligarchy and holocausts. But when socialism is in the hands of powerful nations which cannot be held in check by others, then you have a recipe for disaster. And when all nations are socialist, society itself, in that environment, will break down, because it is not in the nature of man to be at repose. It is in the nature of man to challenge and be challenged by his environment. And so the more you mollify, the more you dullify society. And there are many books that address this psychology, and many authors. Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "The language of judicial decisions is mainly the language of logic." Mainly. The language of logic. and the logical method and form flatter that longing for certainty and for repose, which is in every human mind. We want to think the system is working, and the system will give us the images that makes it think things are working, and it will prop up things, but often at the expense of others. But he goes on to say, but certainty generally is illusion, and repose is not the destiny of man. So there is no social security. There is no guaranteed welfare of the individual. We imagine it to be so, but the very instrument and machinery by which we try to obtain that will determine the nature of our lives. And if we decide to take care of the needy of our society by force, contrary to the teachings of Abraham, Moses, John the Baptist, Jesus Christ, and the early church, we will alter the nature of our society. And we'll give you some examples of that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our life seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back. Aldous Huxley wrote a number of books, and in 1958, the assessment of his 1931 novel, Brave New World, there was a Brave New World Revisited, said that any bird that has learned how to grub out a good living without being compelled to use its wings will soon renounce the privilege of flight and remain forever grounded. If the bread is supplied regularly, copiously, three times a day, many of them will be perfectly content to live by bread alone, or at least by bread and circuses alone. In the end, says the Grand Inquisitor in Dostoevsky's parable, in the end they will lay their freedom at your feet and say to us, make us your slaves, but feed us. Bread is not the opiate of the masses. It is the cyanide. Huxley saw welfare state arising before it really got kicked started in the late 1960s. And I don't even know if that's when it was kick-started. It was given a fribulation in the 60s and a fribulation in the 30s. after the 1929 crash, which came from a socialist money system by way of the Federal Reserve and their fractionary system of loaning money into circulation. That in itself is socialism. You are not dependent upon actual funds produced from the ground and from the earth and from the sweat of men, but from the imagination of men, to be paid back in the future, not by what you have earned, but what you must earn and return to those who, by their own imagination, created. Federal Reserve System is idolatry. You worship an unseen god of copious prosperity that does not really exist. It is a violation of the principles of the Sabbath, because you did not work 6 days and take your rest. You took your rest, and now you owe 9 days of labor, because it's usually fractional reserve is 1/10. You have abandoned all your Sabbath keepings, all your days holier than that, and thou, or whatever you want to call it, is to no avail, because the very foundation of your society is built on the violation of the precepts of the Sabbath. Work 6 days and take a day of rest. You did not do that. You have not done that. And so far as I've seen, most of you do not intend to do that. And so your days will not be good. You have written in your own history the product of your future. By trying to support the less fortunate by transferring trillions to them from the pockets of those who strain and work and sweat each day without their daily consent, and supposedly with no strings attached, although those strings are definitely attached, we have ensured the ultimate bankruptcy of our country and of our world. Americans have willingly sacrificed their liberty, their freedom, their civic responsibility for the safety and imagined security of free bread. Huxley hadn't lost all hope. He seems to have foreseen the coming revolution led by those who are being left with the bill for the bread and circuses promised by myopic politicians over the last 4 or 5 decades. And he writes, "When things go badly and the rations are reduced, the grounded doodahs will clamor again for their wings. The young people who now think so poorly of democracy may grow up to be fighters for freedom. The cry of give me television and hamburgers, but don't bother me with the responsibilities of liberty, may give place under altered circumstances to the cry of give me liberty or give me death." So even Aldous Huxley was beginning to realize this problem in as early as 1958. Many other people have written about it throughout the ages. You can go back to Rome and you can examine the documents of Rome warning about the more laws, the more corrupt society. They talk about this free bread and circuses, of course. The very idiom comes from 100 AD and Juvenal in the writing of his plays. So we see that this idea that charity by the state, which is no charity, eats away and erodes the character of the individual so that society as a whole is destroyed. Society produces individuals in the family, and anything that erodes the family erodes society. And socialism erodes the family. Systems without socialism are never perfect, but socialism is guaranteed imperfection because it takes responsibility out of the hands of the many on an individual basis and puts it in the hands of the few on a powerful basis. So if we were to look at some of the statistics presented to us by David Walker, former head of the GAO from 1998 to the year 2008, and compared the U.S. Empire to the Roman Empire in August 2007, He has been warning the country about our unsustainable fiscal path for over a decade. Since August of 2007, the national debt was increased from $8.9 trillion to $14.6 trillion, a 64% increase in 4 years. 4 years. That's not just unsustainable, that's suicide. We've increased our cumulative expenditures on our wars of choice in the Middle East to $1.3 trillion since 2001. And these figures, again, are not that recent. They're changing daily and increasing, and nothing is going back. Our annual military spending rose from $653 billion in 2007 to the current, at the time of these figures, to $966 billion, a 48% increase in 4 years. Federal government transfers for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment veterans, food stamps, welfare increased by $1.7 trillion in 2007 to the current levels of $2.3 trillion. Again, this is in 4 years, a 35% increase from 2007. Add 4 years to that, and you're only 2012. Now we're 2014. Where are we at now? It's unbelievable. David Walker once said there are striking similarities between America's current situation and the factors that brought down Rome, including declining moral values and a political civility at home, an overconfident and overextended military in foreign lands, and fiscal irresponsibility by the central government. But what was the solution? They never found one. Rome never found one. Romans, some Romans did. One of them was Paul's half-brother and his nephews and nieces who lived in Rome. Wealthy men who lived in Rome. Powerful men who lived in Rome and became Christians. Not the Christians you see today, but the Christians of the early church. The Christians who took care of the needy of their society by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. Those Christians altered a section of society that would follow this other way. And the ones that wanted to remain socialist, in repose, in their vain imaginings, they often persecuted the Christians. But it was the lifeblood of Christianity that saved the people more times than not, as Rome in its decadence crumbled around you. The early Christian church was referred to by Gibbons as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire, an ever-increasing state. He talks about its union and discipline, which was the key to its success, but also an element of its persecution by the paranoid emperors of Rome. They feared that union and discipline. Where did that union and discipline come from? It came from a people who cared as much about their neighbor as they did themselves. When they read, "Love thy neighbor as themselves," they actually put it into action. They took care of the needy of their society and would not touch the free bread and circuses of Rome. They did not pray to our Father who art in Washington. I quote Paul Harvey there in 1964, warns that that's what we were beginning to do. And he continued to warn people every year, clean into 1996, that that is the mindset of many Americans, that if they have something missing, ask somebody who can exercise authority and force my neighbor to contribute to my welfare. And they think they're Christians. Vain imagination. Workers of iniquity. Underminers of society. Gibbons concludes, Edward Gibbons, who wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, he concludes there were five marks of the Roman decay culture. And he lists them off. Concern with displaying affluence instead of building wealth. How many people drive fancy cars on borrowed money? How many people build fancy homes on borrowed money? Now, there is no two ways about it that the banking system wasn't too big to fail, that the entire buying out of the debt of the banking system was simply to stimulate the economy. Much of the debt that was bought out by the government went to foreign banks to buy out their bad paper so that those foreign banks would turn around and buy U.S. Treasury notes to prop up the decline of the Federal Reserve System. So we were borrowing money from our right arm to put in our left arm like a transfusion with a net gain of zero and actually more debt. But the decline also came about, that economic crash also came about because too many people. The government certainly made it easier to borrow this money, something that Norman Dodd warned about and Bill Clinton signed into law. Not to pick on Bill Clinton, it was Bill Clinton said himself when he was in Scotland on the day his father died, his real father. He said, by the time you become president, somebody else is calling all the shots. He was a puppet like anybody else. And someday, like Caiaphas, he might even repent of his wicked ways. I don't condemn him. The people, though, who were borrowing beyond their means because it was available, made available by men who should not have made it available, but you still did it. The responsibility for the condition of the world today is on the head of every individual who does not seek the righteousness of God and the ways of God and the ways of Christ. The inevitable is taking place. But you, knowing that, you know now that you can do something about it. You can change. You can alter your way. You can turn around and do something different. How different? I could go on forever and to show you all the different ways that you could do these things differently. But we share that on the Living Network. And if you join the Living Network, we'll share it with you through the network. So anyway, his first item, concern with the display of affluence instead of the building of wealth. In other words, the anti-Sabbath approach to life. Get it now, pay for it later. Big mistake in society. Changes the environment of society and therefore the outcome of the character of society. Second item, obsession with the sex and the perversions of sex. People think that Sodom and Gomorrah's sin was sodomy, named after the city itself. But Sodom and Gomorrah's sin is specified in the Bible as in a time of affluence they did not strengthen the poor. They weakened it with socialism. The obsession with sex and perversions of sex is the byproduct of that socialism. Because it breaks down the family, we no longer realize that this natural function is for the purposes of creating family, of being fruitful and multiplying, of giving birth to society one child at a time. This obsession is the result of our rejection of the ways of God, of the idea of Sabbath. Not the day, but the way of earning your way, of not praying to men who exercise authority to obtain your social welfare. That is merely a snare when you do that. When you sit and eat with rulers and you eat of all those benefits they offer, you are weakened as a society. Your family becomes superfluous. You don't need your family, you've got government. So now what else do we do? So we can pursue what's in our hearts, or what is put in our hearts by our own imagination? When you turn your back on the truth, you turn your back on everything connected with that truth, and you become less a man, less a woman, and you pervert the natural use to something completely perverted. Number three, art becomes freakish and sensationalistic instead of creative and original. Today, my son was looking at all the Kaiser Frazier cars that were produced way back. There was over 600,000 Kaiser Frazier cars produced. But the substantiveness of those cars and the fabrication, you know, he pointed out, he says, that steel was dug out of American mines and smelted by American coal, and the And the leather seats were made from American cows. And he shows a picture when he was looking at them on the net of them being exported to, I think, Finland, although a lot of them were exported to places like Argentina because they were so tough. But that was a different era. You know, I look at Picasso's paintings in the early days, and they were beautiful. But when he became freakish and sensationalist, cubist, etc., it wasn't art anymore. Oh, they portray it as art, and oh, you just don't understand it, and you don't see it, and everything. No, something's happening to your consciousness, to your mind. You are being changed by your society. He used to paint beautiful pictures when Spain was seeking anarchy. Anarchy as it was really meant. Now we're told anarchy has to do with chaos. Well, the anarchists in Spain were building roads and schools and hospitals. They weren't tipping over buses, but they called themselves anarchists because they were trying to take back their responsibilities instead of giving their responsibilities to governments that exercise authority and compel the offerings of the people to build roads and hospitals and schools. The problem is when you centralize the power and control of those schools, I hear people saying, on a radio program I did recently, the commercial was talking about people taking back their schools, fighting the core curriculum that's coming out. Taking back their schools. It's not their schools. They're federal schools. Public schools. You want to take back education, homeschool. Take back your children out of those schools and homeschool. I heard Ron Paul talking about dedicating a lot of his retired time to encouraging home school, home education. We really shouldn't even call it homeschooling. We should call it home education because we should be educating our children ourselves. We write a lot about that. And we will help you join the network, and we'll help you find ways to do that. Even if you're both working parents or you're a single parent, you can still do that if people will come together and help other people. At least get back to the one-room schoolhouse, even if it's in your living room. You can do this. Don't let people make you think that it's too much. You can't do it. We did it before, and it made us a great nation. We can do it again. Number four, widening disparity between the very rich and the very poor. Well, that certainly has happened. The middle class is all but destroyed. And I heard somebody talking the other day, and he was talking about socialist solutions to the fact that there's this huge devastation of the middle class and upper middle class. Well, socialism is what has brought that about. Socialism, socialist money system, social welfare breaks down, social security breaks down the family as much as anything. Hard times is what makes us strong. You want to become a great weightlifter, you got to lift more than 10 pounds. You got to lift 100 pounds. You're lifting 10% of your responsibilities when 90% of your responsibility is taken care of by government men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other, which is why Christ forbid Christians to participate in such schemes. And John the Baptist was against such schemes as those started by Herod. Number five, increased demand to live off the state. 50 million Americans standing in imaginary bread lines with EBT cards. Millions of Americans eating at the trough of kings in an untold amount of benefits. Even though the Bible tells us if you sit and eat with a ruler, put a knife to your throat. Warns you that he serves deceitful meats. Warns you that what should be for your welfare will be a snare. And you don't know this. And you have these godless preachers who have a form of godliness but deny the power of Christ, the actual power, the dunamis of Christ, to be your king, who does not rule over you with an iron rod but with a loving heart. And you do not know him unless you relate to your neighbor with that same loving heart caring about him as much as you care about yourself, not forcing him to contribute to your welfare, not dependent upon a bankrupt system. You worry about Congress' fiscal responsibility. Where is yours? As long as you demand these benefits at the expense of your neighbor, you are not fiscally responsible, and therefore you are responsible for the decline and fall of the American empire. Larry Elliott was writing in the UK Guardian recently, and he described the rot that has destroyed every empire in history. And he says, military out, overreach or overstretch, widening gulf between the rich and the poor, a hollowed out economy. Hey, you can go on the Federal Reserve site and they'll tell you Federal Reserve notes have no value. It's only in your imagination that they do, and it's only a matter of time before people wake up. He goes on and lists citizens using debt to live beyond their means. Well, hey, that's the name of the game. And the game has a bad outcome. And once effective policies no longer working, I'm not sure they were all that effective. Or maybe they were effective, because maybe that is the very effect, this decline of the American empire is the very effect that those who brought these systems into America had in mind. But who's to blame? You're going along with them. You're participating. There are so many levels that you can start turning around on. And it's going to take time. And the sooner you start, the better off you'll be. He goes on, the high levels of violent crime. Well, actually, we've seen a decrease in violent crime in some periods of time. Why is that? Why does it go up and down? That's another whole topic we'll have to explore. But the reality is there's a lot of crime that is not violent crime. It's in the courts. People being robbed, their children being taken away. And then going back to Milton Friedman's reference to inflation. Is a taxation without legislation. Inflation has robbed everybody from the beginning of this program to now. The money in your pocket is worth less because of inflation. And it wasn't a violent crime, but it was a crime that you participated in, because not only was the money in your pocket worth less, the money in your neighbor's pocket was worth less. And it turns us into a society of dog-eat-dog, not a society of loving thy neighbor as thyself. Because each of us are scratching to get enough of this money that is actually worthless. We need to create the bonds of society based on that faith, hope, and charity, like that little storekeeper in Granora, who doesn't remember when the bill was paid, but his father told him about it, and he remembers it. An epidemic of obesity, and an epidemic of facelifts, an epidemic of what you look like rather than what you are. Addiction to pornography and excessive use of energy may be telling us something. The U.S. is in an advanced state of cultural decadence. But it's not alone in the U.S. We see the same thing in Australia and now in all over Europe, and it's on its way in China. They're getting more and more money in China to spend, and what are they spending it on? What's happening? They're altering the nature of their society. Henry Ford once said, "It is well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning." And so they keep you ignorant. You're more easily controlled if you're ignorant. That's the way they like it. Till we meet again, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.